And welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Coleman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg and Amelia Danella. In this episode, we're going to discuss our thoughts on the season in between the last two international breaks. What can we learn from these matches this part of the season? Also, we'll answer your questions that you sent us on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. We have much to discuss, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Amelia. Yeah, doing well. We're glad when the international break's over and we get a game again this weekend. But, yeah, good chance to chat about Fulham like we always do.
Absolutely, my friend. Absolutely. Emilio, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. Hi, Mike. Yeah, it's good to be back after a small break for a personal reason. So, yeah, nice to be back by popular demand and hopefully it will dismiss all the theories I may have defected to another club or to another team. So I'm fit, I'm well. I needed a break for various reasons. So, yeah, it's good to be back. And, yeah, it'd be good to do this show today, reflect on, you know, how we're progressing up the ranks and the table over the next over the next hour or so. So, yeah, glad to be on the show tonight.
Listen, I look forward to going through this with you guys. We talked about this in between the last two international breaks, so let's now look at it now between these two international breaks, the second and the third. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just give me your overall analysis of the results after the second international break up to right now. What have you learned from Fulham?
Well, I think the main thing is we learned that we can compete with the top teams. And we can string a run of results together, but there's still work to be done. And but I actually think, you know, starting with the Barnsley game, really good away win, some cracking goals. And I still think, you know, possibly the first goal that day is one of the best build-up goals we've scored this season. Norwich, you know, we should have come away with a win possibly in the end. Villa was the downer. We didn't. Really, I think we gave them too much respect. Huddersfield just showed, you know, what this team can do against a Huddersfield team who have started the season really well. And then, of course, rounded off with a great win on TV on a Friday night against Brentford. So, yeah, for me, it's brought back, I would say it's brought back the optimism for the vast majority of the fans, which had disappeared in the last sort of run of games. Some of us, you know, still thought we had the ability in the squad and in the team to produce what they've shown recently. And I suppose the real test is going to be coming up, isn't it? You know, we've got some hard games and lots of games over the next couple of months. But yeah, I think the main thing is certain players like Martin, Johansson have come to the fore. Callis has come back. And I've seen nothing in this league. I mean, I know we played Newcastle first game and they're walking away with it now, but I've seen nothing else in this league that should scare us. And, you know, the fact that we were one of the, you know, best teams over those five games should show that we are certainly playoff capable at the absolute worst, really. It's going to take some luck, a lot of hard work, but we can do it.
Okay, very good there, Mike. I'll be asking you in a few minutes what match was a turning point for you, because there were several matches there that we could point to. You mentioned the Aston Villa match, the Barnsley match, the Norwich City match. So I'd be curious your thoughts when we talk about that. Emilio, what has stood out for you during this time period where Fulham have, it seems like, turned the corner? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just think, you know, we're obviously seemingly scoring a lot more freely. I think that was one of the criticisms. Other than the Villa game, we've scored, 11, 12 goals in the other four games. So that's something, you know, that's significant. You know, there's obviously more confidence in the team. But to Mike's point, Martin, everyone was criticising him, me included, thinking he was offering little value to the team. He's coming into his element now. He's proven to be quite clinical, a team player, running around, you know, making good runs. Is one I've been very, very impressed with. You know, I think, other than that, his debut where he got substituted early on, surprisingly, I think since then, he's come on leaps and bounds. You know, he's making a lot of forward runs, looking for those teasing balls through the middle, a few assists in the mate as well. So yeah, again, it just seems to be this togetherness. We've got more pace, but we're more direct. I think that's the key thing. We might talk about tactics shortly, about the fact that we've only got Parker or McDonald in the last couple of games rather than both. I think we just seem to be a lot more direct. We haven't got as much possessions in previous games, but maybe that's a difference. We're going forward rather than sideways and backwards like we did in the Villa game. And we are creating a lot more chances. We're being a little bit more clinical and we're playing some decent teams. Norwich, will be there in top six or there or thereabouts. Barnsley have had a good start to the season and, maybe overachieving. Villa are pushing up, not down. Huddersfield have been top three all seasons and Brentford are never easy to beat. So overall, five tricky games. But I think what Mike said on a couple shows previously is, who should we be scared of? I'm not sure there's many teams I would be worried about. The Newcastle, who will run away with the league, and Brighton, who are confounding the critics and continuing to just be difficult to beat. Other than that, if you start to put a run as well as Brighton are doing, then what's stopping us getting into that top six? We've always said top eight was achievable, but could we do more than that? As long as we stay free from injuries, we've got a lot of games coming up in the next 2 months. That will be a test of the pudding. But overall, eighth place, a couple points off the playoffs, 2 points off the playoffs. We shouldn't complain. I think, are we overachieving, or is this a position we all expected us to be? And I think this is the minimum we expected to be. I think we can push on from here. We've got the squad, we've got the depth, and we've got the confidence as well.
Emilio, the one thing that I've noticed during this time period is an identity. We didn't have one under Kit. Have you seen this identity, this team coming together? We're going to talk about the starting 11 in a little bit as well. But have you seen a togetherness and identity being built now that maybe we didn't see earlier in the season?
I think we have. I think at the end of the day, it's obviously, Jokanović has got a specific style of football. He's obviously tried to implement that last season with an average bench of players. This season is, we've got a lot of pace in the team. And that's what's, this division, as long as you can score more than you concede, then you're going to win points. You're going to move up that table pretty quickly. And we can achieve, another goal scorer. I think Yanis made a point in last week's show that I think we get another scorer to complement Martin. And I think I don't think we can expect anything less than top six, but we have got an identity now. We've got a good passing game, good rhythm, good movement. If the last two games are anything to go by, then we seem a lot more direct. And rather than, winning games or getting 65% possession and not winning the game, I'd rather get 52-55 and winning comfortably like we've done against Huddersfield and Brentford. So there's a lot of positives to look forward to. And, we've got a lot of options as well. But Callas coming back, Luko, playing, out of his skin, and Johansson as well, who is looking very tasty. I think, we've got the makings of, surprising a few of the critics who haven't really given us much chance. And that's important as well. We're in the background. We're not in people's eyes thinking, Fulham can go places. It's all about Newcastle. It's all about Brighton. Norwich may sack their manager soon if they don't get any more wins in the next couple of games. We're quietly getting on with business in the background. That can only be a good thing.
Okay, very good there, my friend. And Mike, I want to go to you because Emilio brought up some very good points as we analyze this time period for Fulham. The possession numbers, Mike, especially in the last two matches, have gone down. So I want to ask you, we've talked a little bit about this. Is it as simple to say that it's eliminating Parker and just having McDonald and Johansson play together, that those numbers have gone down, but we've become more efficient with our possession? Is it that? And also, is bringing Callas back the major difference defensively? So I want to analyze these two points to what has been going on with Fulham lately.
Well, I'll start with Callas. I mean, from the beginning of the season, I've been saying how important he is and how undervalued I think people initially thought he was. I remember conversations about, Callas had been moved to right back, it'd be Maddall coming in, or he'd be moved to sub. But really, he's our number one choice at centre back, as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that he's come back and we've done so well result wise, I think I did a stat, or I checked the stats. We've had 5 clean sheets in 16 games. He's played 10 games, and all 5 clean sheets have come when he's played. So I think that's a little bit more than a coincidence. And also, his mates, the players next to him, seem to play better. Sigurdsson has suddenly found the ability that we thought possibly he had, you know, certainly over the last couple of games. So he's been very important to this sort of return to form, especially over the last, you know, two or three games. But I think the Parker one, we have touched on this before. Initially in the season, those two guys playing together, Parker and McDonald, and we had a lot of the ball, an awful lot of the ball, and we were getting results. And then we had that bad run, which also coincided with McDonald not being in the team as well a little bit. But then we've seen the change to McDonald being first choice as the single sitting player in midfield, and Parker's been out the last couple of games. And so I think it's two things. It's the change in formation. It's going to the one sitting and the two central people in front. And I think we shouldn't underestimate the fact that we've now been able to bring Kearney into the middle more with him and Johansson. You know, we've got more legs now to help the main central striker, which is Martin, obviously. And the two other guys are doing, you know, especially on the right, you know, we didn't want Kearney trying to go down the wing and cutting inside. We want him in the middle, influencing the game. And, you know, we found a way of doing that. But I do think when Parker plays, we sit a little bit deeper and he gets the ball and he does slow the game down. And there are times to do that. But he slows it down and he's looking at playing the very quick, you know, you give it to me, I'll give it back to you, I'll give it to me, give it to the centre back, give it back to the goalkeeper. And so he ended up, you know, with, you know, 657, nearly 700 passes a game, but not really where they're going to cause problems. And I think Emilio's right. I'm not going to use the word, I don't like to use the word direct. You have this image of, you know, getting the ball, you know, just lumping it forward. I think what we're doing is we're being more positive and we're playing like Watford did under Jokanović. So that's what's reminding me of the last couple of games. I remember Watford absolutely killing us. And attacking with pace and strength. And although we probably haven't got the, you know, it would be nice to have Troy Deeney up front, but, you know, Martin is doing his kind of role while the other busy beam midfielders and wingers are doing theirs. And so we're getting the ball forward quicker, but not in a long pass. We're passing it from the back forward. If we take that Barnsley goal, you know, first couple of goals and then one the other in the other game, we're getting it from the back to the front much quicker. And so, yeah, and this is all, you know, and this is all producing the football we're enjoying and particularly the results as well.
Okay, very good. And Emil, over to you, because Mike brought up something very interesting, because not only were we talking about the McDonald and Parker situation, we were also talking, he also mentioned Kearney, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because people have been reminding me how much I was complaining about Sonia Luca. And how I didn't want Sonia Luca in the lineup. But I did say that if you move them over to the wing, I could live with him over on the wing. Well, listen, he's proved me wrong, because he's played well and also has Kearney played well centrally. So talk about that changing our fortune as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. I've been one of Luca's critics, you know, the first half of this first 8 to 10 games, because, you know, a lot of ball, a lot of, you know, good qualities, but final, you know, his end product was very, very poor, and his final ball leaves a lot to be desired. But putting him out wide, he's just hurting defenders left, right and centre. You know, they can't cope with him. And again, you know, this, you know, Steve Bruce used him in a few games he used him last season for Hull City, played him in a different capacity, and you know, he seems to have found a niche for him playing wide, upsetting defenders. They can't cope. His pace is incredible. He's now getting the confidence that he's obviously creating a lot of assists. He scored a couple of goals recently as well. Just hope he's not going to be scarred by winning the Player of the Month award, and suddenly he's going to end up getting sent off in the next game against Sheffield Wednesday. Let's just hope, you know, we don't get the infamous syndrome when a player wins an award or a manager wins awards, we go down a negative path. But you know, Aluka going wide has suddenly changed the dynamics. To Mike's point, you know, we are maybe not direct is the right word, but we're a lot more positive, a lot more adventurous, and attacking with a lot more pace. And Kearney's got free reign in the midfield as well, which is what we wanted to see. But I'm seeing a Kearney Johansson relationship there as well. They're both interchanging with each other. And you know, I keep going on about Johansson, but you know, you look at his He's always looking for that killer ball. It reminds me of a sort of maybe a worse version of Brian Ruiz. We're not saying that in a harsh way, but you know, looking at Brian Ruiz, always in the midfield, looking for the ball, looking for those through balls, and looking for that killer pass. And Johansson does a lot of running off the ball, and him and Kenny are complementing each other very, very well. And them two can be very, you know, could be fundamental to the success of this team. Aluko with his pace and variety and trickery will upset defences, but Kearney and Johansson playing together in the middle, and Johansson complementing with that, this could be a very interesting formation there. You know, I like that. I like the look of Johansson. I know I've banged on about it quite a bit, but he's got the skill in the team with Kearney. The others have got trickery and pace. Johansson's got maybe some brains as well.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Very good analysis by the two of you. And Mike, I want to go back to you because I was just racking my brain, trying to think of when did this all start to turn? That's why I was using a match that's the turning point. You know, I remember the Norwich City match when we had that nice spell, but did things really turn there? Did things turn in the Aston Villa match? Because we could point to that because then they started going forward after that. Did they learn something from the Aston Villa match that was a turning point? Was it the Huddersfield Town match or even as late as the Brentford match? Where do you think was the turning point in this period of time for Fulham, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, certainly over the last five games, I mean, I'm going to say the turning point or where we realised what the team can do was actually at half time against Norwich. You know, we're two down. We shouldn't have been two down. We've given away, you know, two penalties. You know, Malone's having a nightmare in our own box. And so, you know, you're talking about, you know, we're having a poor home record. How are we going to come out second half? Is he going to take Malone off seeing as he made those mistakes? He's got a session on the bench. You know, so, and then we come out and let's not be around the bush here. We absolutely battered Norwich. And especially for, you know, from about the 50th minute onwards, we slaughtered them for, you know, 25 minutes. We're in their half. I did some stats and, you know, 70% of the play for 20 minutes was in their half. We, you know, and this is a team which are currently, sitting fourth, I think. And at the time, I think they were second, maybe. And for me, they're my second favourites to go up as well. So in that second half, the way we played, the way we got back into the game, took the goals, and we should have won really in the end. For me, it was a turning point. Yes, the next game, the Villa game, was a damp squib for us, and then we've produced two great results. But at home, where we haven't been playing well, to produce that kind of performance goes back to what both me and Emilio said at the beginning. We shouldn't be afraid of anyone in this league. There may be two teams who are better than the rest. But, you know, regarding everyone else who's going to be challenging top six, there's no one there we should fear. And, for me, that was the turning point. That half-time where he never panicked, he never made the change, which I certainly expected him to do. So man management-wise, you know, could have absolutely murdered Malone, you know, take him off at half-time, which is, you know, I was saying do it. But he kept him on and he played well. And, you know, that left-back spot is his for the moment, isn't it? And you've only got to look at the Brentford game, how well he did in that.
Okay, very good, Mike. It's a great point to look at that second half of the Norwich City match. I'm glad that you brought up Scott Malone because many managers would have taken him off. He stuck with him, and it paid off. You know, over time, it obviously paid off. And you just have to, like you said, point to the Brentford match to see where he has come from that point on. Emilio, what was the turning point match for you?
I agree with Mike in the sense that, you know, we should have beaten Norwich over the 90 minutes. We absolutely battered them and crucified them in the second half. But, you know, again, from 2-0 down, we would have taken that point. And Norwich, I think, are overachieving the season. I actually didn't predict them to get in the top six, if I recall, at the beginning of the season. I just thought they didn't have enough goals in them this season. And, you know, they're losing quite a few games. I'm sure Alex Neil will get sacked if they don't win the next game or so. I think the turning point was the outcome of the Villa result. I just thought, you know, we gave them, as Mike said earlier, too much respect in that game. And I think if Jokanović was a little bit more positive in that early second half, he would have made some substitutions. that game was there for the taking. At 0-0, evenly poised, you know, we made some tactical or positive changes, we could have won that game comfortably. But we had all that possession and zero shots on target. That was a wake-up call, as far as I'm concerned, and probably the turning point. And since then, we've seen a different Fulham, you know, a lot more assertive, more positive, more, you know, direct, to use my term, not necessarily long play direct, but direct in terms of going forwards rather than sideways and backwards. And that Villa game, we were, Mike and myself were both there. It was torturous at times. All we were doing is backwards, and sideways. And I think Scott, you know, the keeper had more touches than the forwards put together. So don't just, I think that was a turning point. The reality is, we, how the hell did we come away from Villa Park with all that possession with no points on the board? And I think that was a wake up call, a reality check. And maybe that was a time to reflect on something needs to change. The philosophy, you could still try to play the philosophy of keeping ball, possession, playing attractive, fast flowing football, but at the same time, having 60-65% possession and creating no shots on target is not going to win you games. So in my view, it was a Villa game was a turning point. And since then, you know, Callis has come back into the team, two clean sheets, comfortable wins, and on a high, hopefully, against Sheffield Wednesday and Brighton to come. So it's that, in my view, was a turning point over the last five games.
That's very interesting, Emilio. I'm going to go right back to you because I was thinking that as well. Mike brings up a good point about the Norwich City match, but a point after that match, I want to ask you, do you think that after that loss, Savisa and his coaching staff did some self-evaluating and tried to fix what went wrong in that match and now have applied that moving forward?
Absolutely. I think it's, every fan, I don't know where I was sitting, every fan was just, how the hell can we not score against this team? This was the worst Villa team I can ever remember in my living memory. And they were there for the taking. But, you know, we didn't create much. We didn't, you know, we gave them too much respect and unfortunately came away pointless. But that was a reality check. And the management and the coaching staff would have gone away and said, we just need to make some subtle changes here and actually make possession count, you know, maybe, you know, be a little bit more forward thinking in the way we play, more width as well. At times we find a little, you know, that final ball let us stand against Villa as well, a lot of possession, but there was no quality there. I think Johansson was the only one who tried to make a difference and trying to thread those balls and trying to find the forwards. But you know, the way I look at it, they went back home pointless, and it was an opportunity to make a few subtle changes, which he did. To his credit, he made some changes for the Huddersfield game. And, you know, the irony was when I think I did the recording just before the show at Craven Cottage, I was saying we were probably due to give a team a battering sooner or later. Maybe sometimes all that possession, all that passing and all that trickery and pace will pay off. And thankfully, it was against Huddersfield Town. And this is a team who was second in the league that day. And we thumped them 5-0. So to Mike's point, every team is beatable in this division. So if you just get some consistency in this league, any team will push up the table very, very quickly, or likewise go the other way. Look at Leeds. Leeds were being written off as relegation candidates 2 months ago, and now they're above us in the table because they've got consistency. They're winning games. So it's
point.
I think it's
good point to bring up Leeds.
So they're a good example. You know, everyone wrote off for Gary Monk, but a good manager. He was one of my preferences for being the Fulham manager 12 months ago. And look, he's doing a good job at Leeds under a lot of pressure. So you win your home, start winning the home games, which hopefully we'll start doing, continue to be difficult to beat away from home, then, you know, we can get that 76 points minimum that we need to get sixth place. And then it's a lottery after that. But I think we're looking up, not down. I think that's probably the message I'm saying here. And, you know, I think we've hopefully got some exciting times ahead, provided we stay free from injuries over the next 2 months. We've got a lot of fixtures coming up in Christmas time as well. So be interesting to see what formation he plays and, you know, does he start to give some of the other players some chances next few games. But for now, winning formula, 2 wins out of 2, 7 goals, 0 conceded. You know, looking up, not down.
No, I'm right there with you, Emilio, and that's going to lead me to go back to you, Mike. And Emilio brought up a good point. You know, will we see Slavica make a couple of changes? But I want to ask you, do you think he has found his starting 11 and maybe a couple of changes here and there from match to match? But do you think we now have Slavica's starting 11?
Well, just to quickly go back where it changed, I think there's two ways to look at it, yeah. Not, I do think Norwich was changing point in shown what we can do. But I also think, you know, both you and Emilio are right. After the Villa game, you know, tactically, there has been a change. You know, McDonald and Parker were split up. We went to this sort of 4-1, you know, 4-1-4-1 maybe, or, you know, slight variations. And, you know, is the Villa game, have we stumbled across, you know, a winning formula, which we certainly had the last two games. So has he found his 11? I don't believe there is ever a starting 11 as such now in the way football is played. But I think we found the formation and key members of the team. And it's a case of, you know, where other players slot in when needed. It's interesting looking at our fixtures. I mean, basically, we got four games in a row now, all on a Saturday. So there's no midweeks until, you know, the 13th of December. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, certainly starting with, you know, this Saturday's game, an unchanged 18. I don't, you know, I would still prefer another attacker or midfielder on the bench instead of three defenders. But, you know, why would you make a change when, you know, won a game 5-0 and 2-0? So I'll be, you know, I think some of those players who are sitting there outside the squad kicking their heels are going to have to wait a lot longer, and certainly to the second half of December when, you know, we have the two games against Rotherham and Derby, then you got the Boxing Day and then Reading on the 30th as well. So over those four games, you might see some changes, but I think over the next couple of weeks, as long as the results go well this Saturday, that probably will be the starting 11. But like I say, I think it's more a full starting formation rather than a starting 11.
That's actually a very good point, Mike. And what's interesting, I was speaking to a writer who covers Sheffield Wednesday on the Championship Roundtable, and he was talking about the manager for Sheffield Wednesday not able to find maybe a 13, you know, changing one or two a match, that he was chopping and changing too much. What's now look forward to Fulham? I'm glad that you brought up the formation. So you see this as maybe a change or two a match when it's needed, but it really is more about the formation.
I think if we're going to be, you know, on the front foot, being positive, and we've shown that the Villa game, you know, when we go to, not defensive, but just sort of just passing the ball around, you know, not producing anything, we're not going to get the results. So I would hope we're going to be positive, play the type of football he wants to play. And while these players are fit, you know, that's the formation I would stick with. And to be honest, you know, unless it's Newcastle away, I see no reason to go slightly defensive, because as we're saying throughout this particular show, why should we be scared of anyone, you know, any of these teams?
I agree.
And, you know, they may, you know, Brighton is going to be tough because they've got, you know, we got Tonks at their place last year and they are having a good run, and Hooton knows how to set up a team. But, you know, speaking to a Brighton season ticket holder the other day, they know how it can, you know, collapse over a few games. But, you know, it's we still shouldn't be scared. You know, we've just beaten Brentford, one of our, you know, local rivals. Huddersfield second in the table, you know, gave Norwich a good game. So why are Brighton any different? You know, so we should go there in a couple of weeks and look to get something as well. But Sheffield Wednesday is going to be tough. You know, all these games are tough, but we shouldn't be scared, and we should be looking to be positive and take the game to all of them.
Oh, very good point. And Emilio, I want to get your thoughts on this, because Mike is focusing more on the formation and I guess you could say the approach of Solisa, that maybe it's just Newcastle away where we might play more defensive. I want to get your thoughts on that. Do you think this is more to do not with a set starting 11, but a formation, a way of playing the game right now?
Yeah, I think this goes back to your earlier point about having an identity. I think in the earlier games, I think we were trying to run before we could walk. So again, all these new players trying to gel together, you know, many of them wouldn't have been used to this sort of, you know, passing game, keeping ball, keeping the game flowing, let the opposition chase you. I think to some of the players, this was new to them. So again, it's taken them a while to adjust to this new philosophy, new style of football. And maybe we were trying to hold the ball far too often. I think it was made a point in some of the previous shows that it doesn't matter what goalkeeper you have. Let's say the Aston Villa incident, you know, Button got crucified, you know, unfairly, but, you know, we thought it was only a matter of time. Not because of Button's kicking being necessarily poor, but if you give any goalkeeper 50 back passes, likelihood one or two are going to go astray or not go according to plan. So it's, you know, you can have the Joe Hart. He's been known to cock up a few times from back passes and so forth. So it doesn't matter whichever goal you would put in there. So I think maybe we were trying to run before we could walk at times, trying to hold the ball far too often and maybe not having enough confidence to actually go. I think maybe we were a little bit too scared and just trying to find our feet. And maybe we've suddenly just got this burst of fresh air and burst of confidence. And suddenly now, well, if we can beat the team who's second in the league by 5-0, go away to Brentford and win Coventry, get a team that we've struggled to beat in the last two seasons, then who should we be scared of? You know, there's no team that we should be scared of. The thing that we want to get the Craven College to be back to that fortress, like it was in the Premier League days when we were a difficult team to beat. We were often winning 12, 13 out of the 19 home games in the Premier League. Now we barely get, you know, to get that over two seasons combined. So let's get Craven College to be a fortress. Let's get teams to come running scared when they get there. Let's get at them right from the off rather than trying to play sideways for the first 15, 20 minutes. Let's get at them. We've got energy. We've got pace. We've got the players to attack and hurt these opposing defenders. And, you know, we shouldn't be scared at home in particular. We can play a slightly different philosophy away from home, but you're at home. We should be leading the way and we should not be scared of any team that comes there, to Mike's point. So, the other thing as well, I think, was quite interesting was, you know, maybe there was a criticism that maybe Slavica had his favourite players, I quote, and, you know, however good or bad they are, they'll never get dropped. But, you know, he's not afraid to make some, you know, some ruthless decisions. You know, Odoi got dropped, you know, that we ever thought that's he was right. Everyone's favourite after the game against Newcastle. He couldn't do no wrong. But you know, we've been saying for some time, he's not been particularly impressive, you know, hasn't maybe adventured as much forward as Fredericks has. So my point is, if you're underperforming or you're not playing to the right system or ineffective, he's not afraid to make some changes. And, you know, maybe that I've seen him having more balls in the last two games than he had in the preceding 14. So there's something interesting. That's why you may see a slight change. There might be a slight change in the game against Sheffield Wednesday. You know, I'm going to maybe call out Piazon as maybe a risk. You know, I don't know. I'm still a little bit uncertain what does he actually offer. Maybe we can talk about that afterwards, but you know, he could be a player that we can potentially look to replay and bring Ayite if he's back from injury. But Piazon, you know, yes, he covers a lot of ground defensively, but not too sure what his actual role is and what he's actually offering at times. So I think he could offer more quality rather than running. So the question was, would we expect a similar starting 11 for the Sheffield Wednesday game? Probably, but it wouldn't surprise you might see if there's no injuries, maybe a subtle change as Piazon being replaced by Ayite.
Very interesting. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on Piazon. Emilio's mentioned that to me before. Do you think that that could be a potential change?
Well, I mean, I don't think there will be changes because, like I said earlier, you know, two wins, he's played his part. But he was a little bit, he was probably the most anonymous player in the Brentford game. But, you know, he still had a role to play, still defensive. You know, I think his defensive work is allowing us to, you know, also be attacking the way we are. You know, I mean, he's doing an awful lot covering back. I mean, there's one particular thing he did in the even in the Huddersfield game where he actually won a tackle in front of me, in front of me down at the cottage end, and the actual end of the play he was you know, over on the left hand side, over on the riverside attacking. So, you know, he does cover an awful lot of ground. But what does he offer? I think he is busy. He's got a nice touch, and he may not be the greatest tackler in the world, but he's trying his best to get stuck in. And obviously he's been given his chance, and he's taken and he's been part of this run. So I mean, he should be there like a Luko to come in with the odd goal, but also create, which he has shown. So, but yeah, there's an argument he's possibly, you know, Ayite's come back from his injuries, had a few sub appearances. That's the next player in, if you like. But then going back to the players who are out, you know, there's no Cabano, you know, Hosabad, you've got Christensen, you know, we've got a, you know, we've got some interesting players outside that 18. But personally, I don't see a change this week. But yeah, if anyone's in danger, it possibly is him.
Okay, very good, Mike. All right, let's move on and let's talk about the player during this period of time that's most impressed you. I could throw out Sonny Aluko because he actually won the Player of the Month for the Skyfit Championship. But would it be him? Would it be someone else that has really made a difference? The player that really has made the most difference during this time period for Fulham?
Okay, well, I mean, for me, interesting enough, I looked at the man and match results from the five games, you know, the voting that I do. I mean, Malone scores, but he only played in four games. So it's over these five games. So I'm going to go, there's two players who I think have impressed, and that's Johansson and Martin. And I'm going to give it to Martin for me as being the most impressive. Both players started very shakily. You know, people jump into conclusions that certainly on Johansson, who I thought was given the wrong end of the stick when he was subbed after 30 minutes. I don't think he was the worst player, but and then his next appearance didn't go down too well either. And then you've got Martin, who for somebody with his experience and goals that he scored consistently in the Championship, some of the stuff I was reading about him was just, you know, just ludicrous. And so they've come in and they played their part. And I think, you know, Martin has shown what he brings. He doesn't hold it up like a Zamora or anything like that, but you get the ball to him, he's chesting it off, flicking it off to players. He's involved a lot. He wants the ball, which, you know, I don't know if Emilio was at the Brentford game, but you could see him at times screaming for it and not quite reaching him. But I think we've got Martin working. He's the linchpin of everything that we've been doing. And so he's been the most important player for me, followed closely by Johansson's work rate and almost becoming the second striker at times. But yeah, Chris Martin, I'm so pleased given the dog's abuse he got first few games.
Very interesting that you brought up those two players because they have been influential, Mike. You know, again, it's interesting because you went with them and Aluko won the Player of the Month. And I'm glad that you mentioned those two players because they have been extremely influential during this time period. Neil, I want to get your thoughts of where Mike went on this, and do you agree with him, or is there someone else that stands out to you?
This is one of the. I don't want to sit on the fence on this one. I'm going to avoid doing a David Harley and sit on the fence on this.
I was going to say, don't do a David Harley.
I'll do that. I'll try to avoid it as best I can at all times, but. You know, there's three players here. You know, obviously, Luca for obvious reasons. You know, his work rate, his assists, he's got a couple goals as well. It is a close shade between Martin and Johansson. I know I've talked about Johansson quite a bit on the show so far this evening. And, you know, he has impressed me in terms of his general work rate, effort, creativity, his eye for going forward and trying to find that forward pass. And his work rate has been incredible. Even at the Villa game, I thought he was our best player that day. You know, but, you know, he worked very hard, doing a lot of running off the ball. And, you know, just reminded me of Brian Ruiz, maybe with not necessarily the flair or the long hair that Brian Ruiz had, but very, very similar type of player. But, you know, I think reality is, you know, Martin has got goals. You know, the confidence is back. He had the confidence to pick up the ball and take a penalty against, you know. So I think from overall productivity, what do you measure success? I think you measure success on assists, on goals. It's unfortunate Johansson's work rate's overshadowed by Martin's goal. So I'm going to go with Mike, and I'm going to give it to Martin because he has scored the goals in the last few games. He's got his confidence back up. We're going to need him to stay on fire over the next 6 months if we want to get out of this division. And, you know, that's only going to help the rest of the team. You know, he's hungry for the ball. He's making some good runs. Hopefully we've now found a resident penalty taker for the team as well. So that's a positive as well. And, you know, you've got Aluko, Johansson, you know, who will compliment and support him. Kenny as well. Kenny's got plenty of goals in him. So it was a close shave between, you know, between Martin and Aluko. But I think goals scored is the biggest measure of success, especially when you're winning comfortably and scoring goals. So I'm going to give it to Martin as well. But Aluko and Johansson, very close behind.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. Emilio, I'm going to go right back to you. I definitely want to have you analyze Slavisa during this period of time and rate him. So give me a rating for Slavisa and talk a little bit about the job he's done during this time period, him and his coaching staff.
Yeah, okay. Let's just, just before we do that, let's look at just where we've come from. So obviously we've got 24 points from 16 games. So we're averaging 1.5 points per game over the 16 games thus far. Over the last five games, we're averaging 2 points a game. So that's promotional material. 2 points a game over 46 games gets you 82 points, and that will guarantee you a top four place in the playoffs. So there's some positives there in terms of, we've got the momentum. We can get into those players and stay in those players. And, what I've been impressed with Slavisa the last few games is, he's, I think I mentioned a few moments ago, he's not afraid to make changes. I think he recognised the Villa game was a frustrating game. A game we was there for the taking. We came home pointless. And I think he had the balls to make some subtle changes, drop some of his so-called favourite players. And, I'll give him a lot of credit for that. And as a result of the changes he's made, he's brought other players into the frame. You've seen Johansson a lot more assertive, a lot more effective than he was in his debut a couple of months ago. Martin's now scoring goals freely. Aluko is a nuisance on the wide right, on the width. So he's giving us width, pace, energy, etc., scoring lots of goals and assisting at the same time. So I think the formational change he's made is sort of brought a more togetherness in the team, a little bit more pace, more velocity, and as a result, yes, less possession, but possession doesn't always win you games. Like we did at Aston Villa, we came out with no points. So I'm going to give him an 8.5 because over five games, the Barnsley game, we went twice behind in that game, if I recall, and we came away 4-2 winners. Norwich, we should have won that game, but didn't. Villa, we didn't deserve to come away with anything, without creating any shots on target. And so overall, over five games, I'm giving the 8.5 on the basis that he's made some tactical changes. He's changed the formation. He's changed some of the players. Some players fortuitously have come back from injury, like Callas. That shouldn't be unnoticed as well. And, overall, 8.5. If we avoided defeat at Villa, I would have given him a 9. But I think 8.5 is a good rating there for him. And let's keep it up. But interestingly, he's not afraid to make, some drastic changes. Everyone thought maybe Button was going to be dropped after the Villa game, but he stuck with Button, and he's actually done very credibly over the last two games. So he's not afraid to make the formation and player changes. As a result, 8.5 out of 10 is, I think, a fair rating for him.
Mike, I'm going to go over to you, and I want to get your thoughts on what Emilio had to share. And I just want to throw one thing into this conversation that goes along with this while we're rating Slavisa. I think he's playing to all of his players' strengths now, moving them around, the formation change, all the tactics. So I think that should give him a high rating. What are your thoughts on how Emilio rated him, and how would you rate him?
Well, I really haven't got much to add to what Emilio said there, because, I was thinking about what I was going to say, and then he raises, Callas coming back and tactical changes and all of that. I mean, I was thinking 8 out of 10, because in the end, the Villa game was a bad game. We finished the last break, the last run of games with the defeat at home to QPR, came back with a Barnsley game, and suddenly, we were playing really good football again. Norwich game, though, the first half, but the second half, showed what we can do. And, we talk about motivation at half time. They certainly came out and played like that. But, and the Huddersfield and Brentford games and players coming back from injury. And yes, he's made the tactical change. He's dropped Parker. And also he's stuck with players who, like I say, were being criticised for their performances. And like Button, like Martin, he had the strength and the belief that these were the right players, these were the ones that needed to play. But I can't get the Villa game out of my head, really, how disappointing it was. Numbers went up there hoping, this is it. We're going to have a play really well. And it was just so flat. And so, my fear is that is still there somewhere in the background, ready to be, put out on the pitch again. So I'm going to give him an 8. It's been a great run, you know, two points a game over the five games, and you know, some great football. But you know, in the end, where we are now, we need to still do better and consistently. And I'm going to go with the 8. So a bit of a cautious 8. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jukanovic, as you know, Russ, and yes. I feel he is the right person. I just can't get that Villa game out of my head. But you know, 8.5 is probably a fair result as well, and for all the reasons Emilio gave. But I'm going to stick with my original thought of an 8.
Okay, very good. All right, guys. To end the show, I'm going to ask you about where we are right now, being 8th place. But now I'm going to mix in some questions from the Fulham supporters that I put up on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, ask the co-host. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. We actually have two from Gary Cooper. I'm going to give one to each of you. I'll start with one from Gary to you, Mike. Here it is. I know we'll have to see on Saturday, but going on the last two performances, do you think we have turned the corner, or are we still handcuffed to Mr. Deja Vu, Mike?
Have we turned the corner? I mean, we certainly did in the last five games, but you know, we've had three sort of segments of games, and the first part was great, second part was dreadful, third part was even better than the first part, really. So let's hope it's not a Jekyll and Hyde situation. And we, you know, this next run of games, you know, you've got to look at games that I always look at them in blocks. And for me now, we have a block leading up to Christmas. So, you know, you've got Brighton, Sheffield Wednesday and Brighton, Reading, Wolves, Rotherham, Derby. You know, that's six games before Christmas. So, and that's almost halfway. We need to be looking at, you know, 10, 12 points from that if we're going to be in the top 8. So have we turned? I think we have turned the corner. But it's, for me, it's consistency. We need to keep that going for the rest of the season. But like I say, in blocks, we can't afford another. We definitely can't afford another bad run of 4 or 5 games where we drop, where we only get 2 points, because that will drop us back. And we've got our fingernails. We're looking over the ledge. We're on 8th place. You know, we can see the playoffs, and we can just scramble up and get in there. But we don't want to fall back down.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right. Over to you, Emilio. This is also from Gary. With Scott Malone turning out to be one of our best signings, if he continues to impress and keeps his place into January, would this affect Ryan's frame of mind? Would he get frustrated? His first team appearances are very limited. He's wanted by some big clubs. Could he change his train of thought towards a move away? What are your thoughts on this, Emilio, about Ryan Sessegnon?
Yes, Malone has been, I think, one of the surprise packages of the division. I think no one had any high expectations. I mean, all we thought was he's a better version of Jazz Richards, and, you know, he's certainly proved that. And you know, how sustainable can Malone play? You know, I've been very impressed. Other than those Norwich penalties that he conceded, he's been, you know, very effective. Some, you know, delivery of crosses is on, you know, on the whole, pretty good. But Sessegnon is still a young chap, and, you know, I think we've got a coach there. And I think the board will learn from their mistakes. You know, Kit didn't give, like, Patrick Roberts enough game time a couple of seasons ago, and look what happened there. He, you know, okay, yes, we made a good return from him, but you know, we should be having Patrick Roberts playing for us now. Imagine if we retained him, you know, gave him optimism to play more regularly. I don't think we'll make that mistake again. We can't keep afford losing all these players to bigger clubs just because they're not getting game time. I think Jukanovic has made a point, I think, in recent interviews that he will make sure everyone's given a good opportunity to play. And he's wise enough to give him some game time. And it could be that maybe some of the away games, possibly we may play tactically, and maybe Malone will be rested, especially in the lead up to Christmas when we have got 2 games a week. So, you know, I don't think we run the risk of losing Sessegnon. He's still young. He's still learning the trade. You know, he's learning from his mistakes as well. You all have to make mistakes in life to learn from them. So, You know, I think he's got a very mature head for a young lad, and I think you've got an experienced coach there who will keep him sweet, keep him warm as well, and ensure that we don't lose his services this season. Yes, there are a lot of clubs after him, and not surprising with that, but you know, if we can show ambition and progress and moving up that table and sustaining a playoff position, then why would he want to leave the club? Whereas in the past, Dembele didn't feel that there was, you know, the club wasn't going places last season, felt it was time to move on. Patrick Roberts questioned the lack of ambition at the club. So maybe we have turned the corner. Maybe we've got a more positive outlook, and some of these younger players want to be part of that future rather than quitting and going to a Premier League club and only getting loaned out to another Championship squad. So better the devil you know sometimes. And I think if we can show that ambition, reinforce the squad in January with a couple more signings, why would the youth want to move out? I think that this is the right time to be part of that journey. So so I don't think we should be worried about that. I think we'll learn from our mistake, and we have learned from our mistakes, and the Patrick Roberts and Dembele situations won't happen again in the foreseeable future.
Okay, very good there, Emilio. Okay, Mike, back to you. Our final question comes from Jacob Tyson. He actually messaged this to me. Here's his question. When Tomas Kalas goes back to Chelsea from his loan, don't you think we'll need to buy a good replacement center back, because otherwise we will struggle? Also, who would you get as a potential center back?
Well, I'm not sure on targets. I'll say that straight away. But Kalas is a good player, and he will, at the end of the season, we have to see where we are. If we get promotion, then we will have money, and that will allow us to buy players, and it will be up to Jukanovic. If he feels Kalas is somebody who will be good enough for the Premier League, then you know, hopefully we could go to them, because you know, 1 year left on his contract, maybe Chelsea would want to cash in. But on the view, I mean, I read this a lot, and one of my arguments is, it doesn't matter how good you are, no matter how well you do in the Championship, and Newcastle will find this, even if they get promoted with 110 points or something, when you get to the Premier League, it's a different kettle of fish, and you need to get at least half a first team worth of players in, plus another, you know, half a dozen squad players of Premier League quality. Otherwise, you're going to come, you know, straight back down. There is such a gap. And, you know, how can Newcastle, have been struggling for years, you know, last few years in the Premier League, get relegated as one of, you know, as one of the, you know, worst teams, and then they're walking the league? I know they've spent money, but it doesn't change that much. So, yes, it'd be great to keep Kalas next year, whatever happens, because he is I think he's a you know, truly quality player, but you know, there's going to be other teams looking at him, as well as you know, Chelsea. What do they want to do? Although, you know, as we know, Chelsea have got about six teams worth of players floating around somewhere. So you know, he might be surplus to requirements. But as to who else to replace, there's no one there at the moment who I've seen. Centre backs are the hardest for me to sort of pick, because the quality of defenders is just not really there. You know, it's certainly not in the games we see week in, week out in the Championship.
Okay, very good. Very interesting show, guys. Let's end with, are you happy with being in eighth place? I just want to mention this. I told you guys both off air that when I spoke to Louis Shackshaft, the writer for Sheffield Wednesday for Shoot, he happened to mention that that last year at this time, after 16 matches, Sheffield Wednesday were on 24 points. They were, and they were actually in ninth place. We are currently on 24 points. So, Emilio, I'm going to start with you. Are you happy with eighth place at this point?
I think we have to be happy with that. I think, you know, the day beginning of the season, you know, I predicted we would finish around eighth place. So we're at that mark now, you know. So I think we shouldn't be unhappy having recovered the situation. You know, if we look at it pre the last five games, then, you know, we were looking down, not up. Everyone was worried about, you know, I would say relegation, but looking at the bottom six. But suddenly we've turned the corner. We've proved that we've got enough depth, enough quality there, that relegation is not going to happen. But, you know, eighth I'm happy with, on the basis that, you know, we're in the position where I thought we'd be. But looking at the games we've got coming up and looking at the teams above us, you know, this, we can push on from this. You know, this is a, this is maybe the minimum we can hit. You know, I'm not going to get carried away, but if we can stay free from injuries over the Christmas period, reinforce a couple areas in the January transfer window, then why can't we push on? Why can't we start? Why can't we get an average of 2 points per game for the remainder of the season? You know, the Sheffield Wednesday did it last season. Brighton have done it. You know, who else is above us that we should be worried about? Bristol City, Leeds, Huddersfield. You know, these are good teams, but none of them are spectacular teams other than Brighton and Hove Albion. So let's be consistent. You know, let's push on from eighth place. We've got the squad. I think we've got better quality than some of the other team. I'm not being biased here, but I think we do have a better squad. And if we can keep the togetherness here, we can keep the formation, keep to a system. You know, all we can do is looking up. But Mike mentioned a valid point. Is there another Villa game lurking somewhere there? You know, we got battered by Brighton and Hove Albion last season. And maybe take that game aside for a moment. But Reading at home, Sheffield Wednesday at home, these are not easy games. These are teams who are capable of coming to the cottage, unsettling us, you know, stopping us from playing our normal passing game. And that will be the test of the pudding as well, is how do we respond if teams try to unsettle us, try to stop our flow of football? Both those teams will do that. So it'll be good as whether we've got something up our sleeve to respond to that. So it's not getting carried away. Eighth place I'm happy with at the moment. We can definitely hit the upper reaches, top six, because the other teams aren't as impressive as we are. But, you know, it's all about consistency and getting points on the board. And sometimes you have to win rough as well. You can't keep winning smoothly. So let's see how we do when clubs come to the cottage and try to disrupt our flow of the game and whether we've got enough, you know, whether we can rise above that and beat those teams. So let's see. It'll be an interesting 2 months.
Okay, very good. And Mike, you pretty much have already mentioned this on the last show, but let's now go to you and share your thoughts about eighth place again. And Emilio brings up some very good points. You've already said on the last show, talk to me. We're now going to reassess in January. But let's talk about right now. You know, you've done all the math. You know where we are. Are you happy?
I mean, before the season, I've always thought fourth to eighth is where we are quality-wise, squad-wise. And I always said if we could be at worst just not more than 6 points off playoffs come the new year, then I would have taken that. As it stands now, eighth place. We're within reach. We're only a couple of points behind playoffs. In retrospect, though, you look at the results and the performances and games where we, you know, may have lost late or lost points or should have got points, then I think we're possibly, you know, 4 or 5 points short of where we really should be. You know, we're the team that should be sitting in third or fourth place at the moment. But, I've done the maths. In American sport sort of speak, Russ, I would say we're two games back from where we should be. That's, you know, and there's a few games ago, I was worried we were going to be five games back. So, you know, we're certainly there. But we need to, like I said, you need to look at games in batches. And so from the last five games, we've got 2 points a game. Now that's hard to, you know, you do that kind of thing over a long time, you're going to be the second best team in the league. But if we can get three wins in every five, we're going to get enough points to be in the playoffs. And I think realistically, we should be aiming for, you know, third to sixth. I think second will be just that little bit out of our reach at the moment. Playoffs, I see absolutely no reason why we shouldn't be there. So I'll take eighth as it before season, disappointed at the moment, but we're going to improve and we'll probably finish, I reckon, fifth.
Okay, very good, Mike. I'm actually going to come right back to you while you were saying this. I was thinking about this. Mike, have we slightly underachieved?
On performances and results and the way games have, yeah, we have. And I think squad-wise, Emilio said, we have a better quality squad. It's taken time to gel and find the right formula. So yeah, we should be third or fourth, as I was saying. That's where I truly believe we should be. Yeah. For me, it was always going to be Newcastle, Brighton, Norwich, and then everyone else. And yeah, we should be that fourth team at least.
Okay, now we're going to be playing Brighton coming up, Mike. Can you learn anything from that preseason match, or we just throw that away?
No, you just throw that away. Been that, forget it. You know, I mean, it's nothing. Preseason is nothing, really. It's
okay.
It's the league game.
Okay,
it's just the league games that matter. Yeah.
Okay, very good, guys. Excellent show. Let's now go to final thoughts. Emilio, I'll go to you first. Final thoughts before we go.
No, so it's been a good show. It's been good to reflect on, take a step back, and rather than comment on a specific game, just take a reflection on where we are 16 games in. And, you know, especially over the last five games, we I think we have turned the corner. I think we have found that identity that you've mentioned at the beginning of the show, Russ. And, you know, I think hopefully, it's one of these things, you know, we've got two difficult games coming up, you know, on paper. These are two of the hardest fixtures of the calendar. So can we continue the momentum? Can we continue playing in the form that we have been? Or do we get kicked back down to earth? And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Sheffield Wednesday will come here to will make life very, very difficult for us. They've got an organised team. Maybe not as effective as they were last year. A little bit more inconsistent, up and down. And, you know, their results, one week they win, one week they draw. They're slightly inconsistent. But they'll come here to disrupt play. And do we have enough balls to work around that and to just raise our game and just bury them into touch? So we'll see. But overall, it's been a good show. I've enjoyed having this show this evening. We've got a few more days before the Sheffield Wednesday game on Saturday. And it'll be interesting to see how we perform on the day. But let's be very honest, it's not going to be easy. The next two games are going to be very, very tough. And if we come away with those two games with 4 points, again, 2 points average for those two games, then Mike's point, why can't we hit the top four, top five? It's more than achievable.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, Emilio, thank you very much. Over to you, Mike. Final thoughts?
Well, yeah, you know, just over a third of the way through the season. Still lots of football to play for, but as I always bang on about, you know, you have to stay in touch, otherwise you're playing catch up, and we've done that well over the last five games. We just need to continue that, and for the show tonight, yeah, it's been good just to reflect and look back over the games, and you know, we have turned the corner and we're more positive, and the fans are more positive. You see that in the ground over the last couple of games, obviously, but online as well. But you can just see the itchy fingers. We can't wait to get back to, you know, the cottage on Saturday and start playing football again. Enough with the international breaks.
I'm there with you, Mike. My final thoughts, like, I agree with you 100%. Enough with the international break. Boy, I'm done with that. But it is time to wrap up the show. Great show. You guys were fantastic. But it is time to go. For Mike and Emilio, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Boys.